Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is part two of the year's first Q&A with Layla, the first installment in 2015. Got to keep saying it, 2015. That sounds weird.
Well, it'll take me longer to remember to write it. I'll be writing 2014 until March or something.
It's that whenever I write a note, it's like I'm going to write, you know, the date, and then I'll write 14.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that takes about 2-3 weeks before I knock that out. So here we be, and the years just keep cascading by. So continuing on the theme of questions that people ask about intelligent medicine, you got a whole batch of them there. So
yes.
Hit me with your best shots.
Okay, this comes
fire away.
This comes from Michael. That was a Pat Benatar. I just got that. Okay,
that's what I mean. I knew you'd get that. You'd get that pop reference because, for, unbeknownst to many of you, Layla is a very talented musician. She plays. You play rhythm guitar or bass guitar?
I play rhythm. I play a little lead. I'm mostly a singer and songwriter and stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, when are you releasing your album?
I'm not at this time.
Oh, it's on hiatus because of this nutrition gig that you're doing?
Well, this nutrition gig has taken a lot of my attention, yes, but my husband bought me some at-home recording equipment that he's trying to get me to use. So
awesome.
I'm just waiting for inspiration or just to be in the mood to hook all that up. And
okay, so maybe 2015 there'll be a musical version of Q&A with Layla.
There we go. I'll have some background music too.
I'll just do the bass accompaniment. And
okay. Okay, this next question is from Michael. Greetings, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Your podcasts are wonderful. Continued success. Thank you. You recommend Endofin for people who have GERD. I noticed that it's a rice-based product. Consumer Reports has indicated that all kinds of rice and rice products have high levels of arsenic in them, which is dangerous in varied ways to a person's health. Please comment. Well, it's not just rice. There's arsenic in apple, in chicken, in anything that's containing a pesticide or an herbicide.
By the way, there's some cadmium in a lot of chocolates, too.
Yes.
And what's interesting about certain plants, and this is actually a good thing, is that plants actually help to detoxify the environment. They concentrate certain poisons in the environment in them.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, then you eat them, and then you get them. So they've done some studies on this, and I think I've got this right, is that California rice is higher in arsenic than Texas Louisiana rice. I think I have that right. If I misspoke, I'll correct myself on the next podcast. But offhand, that's what I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
There are probably websites which rate the rice. Interestingly, you might say, "Well, I'm going to just have pure organic brown rice because that's the
It
pure,
still has arsenic,
and it may have even more because it's not milled. It's the shell or
the
endosperm
is still
there.
Yeah,
I mean the husk and the endosperm are still there. They may concentrate more than the refined white rice. Paradoxically, it's similar with people who have gluten intolerance. Paradoxically, the whole wheat is worse than refined wheat. Mm-hmm. So it's tough to get around that. What does that mean? Maybe we shouldn't have massive amounts of rice.
This is nature's argument for a very varied diet. We're not supposed to be taking in the same things every day or eating lots of brown rice or just eating a lot of chicken or eating the same things day in and day out. But this is a supplement, and you know what? We just have to deal with whatever minuscule amount of arsenic that may be in this particular product.
And by the way, what's the dosing on Endofin?
2 tablespoons twice daily.
So who goes to a Chinese restaurant and eats just 2 tablespoons of rice? Let me ask you.
You're
going to have a whole bowl of rice, which is a lot more than you're going to get in this product, which is only partially rice-based. So it's maybe the active amount of rice may be a teaspoon that you're getting per serving. By the way, tell us about that product, because it's actually, I have to give you credit for calling my attention to that product, because I said, well, it's an interesting product. Maybe you'll try it with some of our patients who have this common problem of heartburn and GERD.
Yeah.
And it's working like wonders for our patients.
It is. It contains arabinogalactins, phosphatides, astaxanthin. It contains some D-mannose, some xylitol. The herbs it contains are EGCG, cinnamon bark, plantain fruit.
which apple is very, fruit it's just powder. A demulcent herb, which yes. actually creates a coating on the esophagus. All mm-hmm. these are healing herbs. Mm-hmm. EGCG has a cancer preventive effect in yes. Barrett's esophagus, prevents esophageal cancer and stomach cancer.
It strengthens the gastric mucosa.
Right, and it yeah. works great for a lot of our patients.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And it does selectively promote our microbiome.
Yes, it is a prebiotic.
Yes.
It's a prebiotic, so it helps good bacteria to proliferate.
I would still take Endofen, Michael.
Yeah, I mean, look.
You know, we have to live in this world.
We all got to die from something.
We're all going to, you know, right. our food, our right. water, the right. air we right. breathe, you know.
Yeah. Okay. No, but no, it also goes to, I think, the issue of, you know, a colleague of mine once coined a phrase, orthorexia nervosa, which is a play on words of anorexia. Ortho means straight,
correct.
And orthorexia means an undue life-robbing obsession with everything. So that, you know, and I'm not accusing this person is a well-meaning person who's saying, you know, what about the arsenic? But if we minutely examine everything for its potential peril, you know, for example, what? Oh, take fish oil. Oh, but no, but there's pesticides. Okay, that's no good. All right. There's mercury. You know.
We never step outside the house.
Yeah,
we might get hit by a bus.
Right.
Okay. Let's see here. We have, this is very interesting comment from Sheila. On the most recent podcast Q&A with Layla, Dr. Hoffman criticized the South Beach diet for its sparse fat allocation.
Yes.
Sears's new recommendation is even more stringent, and he counts calories, allowing no more than 400 at every meal. After reading his book all day yesterday, I experienced tremendous cognitive dissonance because I believe that low-carb eating did not require strict guidelines with respect to fat.
Right.
I still believe that. If Dr. Hoffman agrees, I wish he'd make some sort of comment on Sears's new book that he made on Dr. Agatston's. Many thanks for your valuable contributions to the health of your listeners.
Well, I have a new suggestion for the name of your new band.
Uh-huh.
Let's call it Cognitive Dissonance.
Some of it sounds like that, so that might be appropriate.
Yeah, right. Okay. But I love that term, cognitive dissonance, because the nutrition field is replete with cognitive dissonance, these controversies which are hard to resolve. And I think somebody, I don't know, maybe it was George Bernard Shaw or one of these guys who said all these great aphorisms, said the mark of a refined intelligence is the ability to hold two thoughts simultaneously in your mind at once, which is the definition of cognitive dissonance. And, you know, so you kind of have to, like, weigh one thing against the other. But, you know, look, I don't want to, I don't want to malign this person, because it's true. There are some contradictions in that. And Barry Sears initially started by suggesting that people replace saturated fat with omega-3 enriched fat. He was all about that. And I think he's coming around slowly to the recognition that saturated fat is
not
that bad. But he's not quite ready to let go of that. I mean, he really was nurtured in the 80s and 90s, where that was still a pretty dogmatic view.
Yes.
And he introduced the view that opened the door a little bit to the notion of healthy fats.
Yeah.
But I think he tends to still believe that we should not consume too much saturated fats. And I think that's one view of the controversy that I don't happen to share. I think that we're now demonstrating that saturated fats per se are not the problem.
We have a conundrum here, too, because what
that's another good conundrum.
Yeah. is those saturated fats that we don't ingest, our body will make. It will make it in the amount that it needs. Yeah,
exactly. There's
a desaturase pathway and the other way.
Right. So, yeah, I was just reading about that in a nutrition journal, is that the body actually synthesizes things like stearic acid, which is a saturated fat.
Stearic acid is a saturated fat found in chocolate and found in meat.
Mm-hmm.
Has really no influence on cholesterol at all. And our body makes it in small amounts. Why? It needs it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So what I would say is, I think if you look at people on the spectrum of this, is Atkins was very bold in mm-hmm. just enunciating, eat all the fat you want. And then mm-hmm. Along came Dr. Agatson, who's actually famous for developing the EBT heart scan and the yeah. calcium scoring system. He's responsible for that.
Mm-hmm.
When you get a score that's zero to whatever, you know, 1,500 or 3,000 or whatever on your...
It's the
Agatson score. He actually lent his name to that scoring system.
Yeah.
Then he turned his hand to nutrition. And as a conventional cardiologist, I think he retained a little bit of that indoctrination where fats were bad.
Mm-hmm.
So he advocated for protein. He advocated for protein. Protein's good, less carbs. But he somehow couldn't come around to accepting what Atkins said about fats.
Right.
Now, you were trained at Atkins,
yes.
and so you're very used to this. We're now coming to believe that protein doesn't provide that much satiety.
No,
and
no.
And so fat actually provides satiety so that you crave less and eat less.
Exactly. So that's one thing. And too much protein is not a great thing either. That can turn to excess blood sugar and kick you out of ketosis. But coming back to Sheila's comment about Dr. Sears' book, no more than 400 calories at each meal, that's a total of 1,200 calories a day. We should never, ever, ever, and I hope Sheila gets our newsletter because I've written about this in last week's newsletter, we should never eat the same amount of calories every day.
Okay.
Because nature thinks, okay, this is where it is. And if it's only 1,200 calories, it's a set point.
Yeah.
Meaning she will downshift your metabolism mm-hmm. so that you can maintain homeostasis, maintain equilibrium. And at some point, anybody who's doing a set number or a low-calorie diet mm-hmm. such as this is going to hit a plateau.
Well, that's a little paleo, isn't it? Because in nature, we were subject to famines and plenty.
Yeah.
It was never
Was never the same amount of calories
right.
every day.
Humans are eaters of opportunity. And
yes.
if they happen to move the tribe into a region where the game was plentiful, they ate.
They feasted. Yeah.
And they can, you know, they put on excess weight. That's why we have the ability to store fat, like
yeah.
camels store water in their humps. And then, of course, they would, you know, overhunt to kill off all the game. Then there would be a drought, and then there would be starvation. And the ones who were able to store fat efficiently survived.
Yeah.
But they, over thousands of generations, over millions of years. And that's why we are terrific fat storers, because
yeah.
the ones that couldn't store fat, they died off a million years ago.
Right.
And they were unsuccessful. You know, they were the dinosaurs,
mm-hmm.
the equivalent of the dinosaurs, because they were not efficient fat storers.
Right.
But also this ties in a little bit with the notion of intermittent fasting
mm-hmm.
and the idea that, you know, you shouldn't eat, you know, to satiety all the time, you know, like a hamster in a cage with like those little bottles that feed you sugar, you know, since you go to the
right.
bottle every few minutes and reestablish your blood sugar, that actually periods of non-eating help to bolster the metabolism, even send a good message to the immune system, create
fasting
an opportunity.
Fasting helps to the repair.
And cleanse the body.
Cleanses the body. It's a detox. It helps to repair your systems.
It promotes something called apoptosis, which is
mm-hmm.
the dying off of unhealthy cells or even precancerous cells.
Yeah.
And you actually need to kill off these inefficient cells, and a little bit of stress helps to knock them off.
It's your body's house cleaning.
Yeah.
And your cells house cleaning.
Okay.
So
that's an essay question answer on that one.
Yeah. Thank you, Sheila. Okay. This comes from, let's see here, this comes from Amina. Hi. I intended to send this to Layla for her Ask Layla program. However, was not able to find the email. I'm a longtime listener to Dr. Hoffman's show. I have a question on berberine. I'm a 59-year-old male. I'm 5'7", 150. I'm trying to manage my elevated cholesterol. My LDL is 170, and I have an A1C of 6.1. I'm trying to do this with exercise, with cholesterol pure plus vitamins from
your
shop.
Cholesterol pure is a phytosterol thing.
Yes.
I think it's going to be the plant phytosterols, which are actually
and
a bit
some bergamot.
Bergamot
right. oil. That's
right.
an Earl Grey tea.
That's a product we have, yeah.
Yes, yes. However, my cholesterol started ratcheting up, and I was wondering if I should try berberine as the next step. My only concern is I heard Dr. Hoffman mentioning it causes weight loss, which is something I would rather not have. Okay, first of all, with this A1C of 6.1, you need to change your diet, and that, I could tell you, will likely bring down that LDL as well.
So this guy is an example of Tofi, what is it, thin outside, fat inside.
Probably.
Tofi.
Tofi.
Because he had, metabolically, he has some of the hallmarks of being fat. He
says, being over fat, yeah.
He has elevated hemoglobin A1C. Hemoglobin A1C is a measure over time of average blood sugar, but it's on a different scale than blood sugar, which ranges, you know, 80 to 100. 6.1 is over the limits we like to see at 5.7 or less. It's not quite full-blown diabetes, but it's pre.
It's pre. Yeah. He's in the foyer of the diabetes house.
Right, right.
So that's one thing.
So he doesn't want to lose weight, but he may have to sacrifice a few pounds to achieve that. You know, this is a phenomenon that occurs often in Asian women who are thin and slight of frame, is they may be seem optimal weight. They may be, you know, 5'4" and 130 pounds, and that's, for an American Caucasian, that's pretty good. But they might have excess internal belly fat that promotes a metabolic problem.
Right. Even actually, across ethnicities, how soon a particular race or ethnicity will get the metabolic syndrome, maybe sooner, like in the Asian population, as opposed to Caucasian or Latino or anything else. So it's very, very interesting. No, this person definitely needs to change their diet to bring that A1C down. He has an LDL of 170, an HDL of 47. I'm thinking he's too low in fat, maybe.
Right.
The way to raise HDL besides exercise
is to
add some fat.
Yeah, and some cholesterol.
Yeah, and some cholesterol, exactly. And more importantly, what is that LDL doing? Is it, if it's doing anything? The particles are important.
That's the other question. And, you know, what they're now saying, the new guidelines for statin prescribing are not so much keyed to LDL. They're keyed to a person's health status overall. And unfortunately, it's making it such that even people who have good LDL, they say, well, if you're diabetic, you've got to take a statin no matter what.
But a statin can cause diabetes.
Exactly. There's a black box. If you look at a package insert for a statin, you'll see a black box warning in bold type that says, this may somewhat increase your risk for diabetes, especially if you're a woman. So that's kind of paradoxical. But again, we are not sure that he needs to lower his cholesterol. I'd like to see a better ratio. We would probably, if this person were a patient, we would say get an EBT heart scan, and we might find that you have very little, if any, plaque. And therefore, let's not focus on your cholesterol. Let's focus on your blood sugar and optimize that, because that might be more likely to lead to your cardiovascular risk than your cholesterol per se. Because we artificially lower your cholesterol with whatever, bergamot or with, you know, cholestipure?
Yeah, the sterols.
We might artificially lower the cholesterol, but we might not substantially reduce his risk, because other risk factors continue. His hemoglobin A1C might go to 6.3, 6.5 while we're doing this.
Glycation, all of that.
Yeah, which is a pathway to cardiovascular disease. So ultimately, we want to...
oxidizing that LDL.
We want to see if his LDL is oxidized or unoxidized, or if it's large particle or small particle. We can analyze that through testing. But ultimately, we want to look inside the arteries, do an EBT scan. Again, we go back to Dr. Agatson, for whom we're not so grateful for the South Beach diet as for the Agatson score, EBT scanning.
Yeah. All right. Well, we hope this helps you. All right. Next question is from Don. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. Enjoy your radio program. I have a question about magnesium. I have AFib, I'm taking magnesium, but want to know which magnesium is more effective for AFib.
Which magnesium
is most effective for AFib. Wouldn't you say magnesium taurate?
I would say the magnesium that you absorb best, number one. Yeah. But I use a lot of magnesium taurate specifically for atrial fibrillation and cardiovascular arrhythmias, like, you know, PACs, paroxysmal atrial tachycardia, rapid heart rate, because the taurine also has beneficial effects on the heart rhythm. Now, you can take a different form of magnesium, like magnesium glycinate, or take jigsaw magnesium, and then take some L-taurine. You'll get similar effects, but you can combine that when you take those two together.
That will be it, magnesium taurate, or any of those.
Yep.
Okay, Don, thank you. All right. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, this comes from Gabe. Please consider doing an intelligent medicine clinical focus on periodontal disease and specifically receding gums.
Great.
Any treatments to regrow gums? What's a supplement regimen that can help strengthen? gums and teeth. I'm thinking about D, vitamin K, C, strontium. Your show and advice have been invaluable over the years.
That's great.
I hope
to
you can help. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it might merit a clinical focus. You know, clinical focuses or foci run about 40 minutes, and there's could be enough to talk about. When it comes to gums, gums are a very important reflection on health. I'll give you a preview of what I might say is that gum disease is highly correlated with other inflammatory conditions in the body because it's like a nesting place for bacteria which release toxins into your bloodstream. So as with any chronic festering infection in your body, it's going to be dragging your body down.
Right, right. And you want to make sure your immune system is particularly well if you're going for a teeth cleaning, right? Because all that bacteria is being released.
Well, it's amazing, but when you get a tooth cleaning, invariably, you literally release bacteria into your bloodstream. And that happens to virtually everyone. Now, people who have normal-shaped heart valves and relatively good immune systems, it's never a problem. They get transient, what's called bacteremia, which is bacteria in the bloodstream. Bacteria don't belong in the bloodstream. They should never be in the bloodstream. But a trauma or a hip surgery or a abdominal surgery or just simply getting a tooth cleaning or even vigorously brushing your teeth can release bacteria into your bloodstream. So for some people who have heart valve problems or valve replacements, they do antibiotic prophylaxis. They used to do this for everyone with a heart murmur. That's one of the biggest turnarounds in medicine that I've seen in my medical career is that tens of millions of people, hundreds of millions of people got antibiotics unnecessarily because they just thought it was necessary because your valve was shaped a little abnormally. They thought the bacteria would
mitral cling. Valve prolapse even until
anyone with mitral now only high grade mitral valve prolapse with you know very jagged heart valve leaflets. Of course, if that were to be if that were to happen, you'd get endocarditis. It's a very severe problem. It requires intravenous antibiotics for weeks. It's a big mess. Sometimes heart surgery. Okay, so coming back to the question on the gums, we did talk earlier in the podcast in part one about the nutrients
vitamin
that are
C,
good, vitamin C, coenzyme Q10 or ubiquinol, vitamin D, vitamin K.
Yeah. Gabe wants to know also, does oil pulling with coconut oil improve periodontal?
I think that's a great idea.
You know, I think it's a wonderful idea,
coconut
too.
Has some antibacterial properties.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good idea for that.
Now, you're supposed to swish it around, from what I understand, for about 20 minutes.
Have you done it?
I haven't done it, no.
It's a really weird. It's well, first of all, you know, you get a really mouthful of spit.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so you just
don't spit it in the sink, though. You'll clog your drains. And certainly don't swallow it because it's full of bacteria.
That's true.
You spit it into the trash.
Yeah, I guess that would be a good idea.
Yeah.
Don't spit out the window either from your...
Have you tried it?
I did. I have.
20 minutes? That's a...
It's well, you know, you like you watch TV or you like, you know, you certainly can't do a podcast. you know, it, you know, it's so it's something that people swear by. We actually did an interview with last year with a guy who wrote a book about coconut oil. I forget his name.
Bruce Fife.
Very good. Very poof.
I think I've got it in my office.
You took your ginkgo biloba today, I'll tell you. yeah, and Bruce Fife has written a book on oil pulling. And maybe I'll re-interview him this year about oil pulling because it's a sensation. It's a phenomenon.
Yeah.
It's like one of those viral things that really people claim all kinds of health benefits. It helps you detoxify. It makes sense it detoxifies your mouth and may be good for your gums.
I can't see the harm of swishing around coconut oil in your mouth.
Well, hey, I mean, you know, you're saying don't swallow it.
Yeah, because it's full of bacteria after swishing it.
Yeah, but your gastrointestinal tract's full of the same bacteria anyway. You've been swallowing that all day long anyway. So it's probably not the worst thing. And coconut oil is edible and actually healthy, so you could swallow it. I didn't swallow it, but, you know, it's something that you can do. What else in terms of natural substances are helpful? You can use a little tea tree oil, which is a little bit gently antibacterial.
Mm-hmm.
You could rub your gums with oregano oil, which is also natural.
Have you heard of Dr. Tongue's oil? He mentions Dr. Tongue. Yeah.
Dr. Tongue?
Yeah.
Okay. Was that his real name, or did he have it legally changed?
T-U-N-G-S. I don't know.
Okay.
He mentions cayenne pepper, besides the tea tree oil that you mentioned.
Well, you know, can you regrow gums? Well, you can regenerate gums. I'm not sure that, you know, if you have really, really extensive gum recession that it's going to come back totally.
Hmm. Okay. Best of luck, Gabe. All right. Let's see here.
By the way, the other thing I will mention, of course, is Spry Dental Defense System,
yes,
which is xylitol-based. It's very helpful for perio disease, and I've seen some very impressive lectures on how the bacteria hide between your tooth and the gum flap. Mm-hmm. There's actually a space between your tooth and the gum flap that covers it up. It's like a gum is like a sleeve that covers the the tooth base. And in that recess is where the bacteria hide and the biofilms accumulate. And xylitol helps to break those biofilms, and very impressive results in periodontal disease. So
yeah,
using a xylitol mouthwash, that's very helpful. Using xylitol gum,
mm-hmm,
since it's paradoxical, chew gum for, well, that's a healthy gum.
Yeah. And xylitol is a sugar alcohol. It's not a medicine. No side effects.
Yep.
Nothing
yep.
like, well, too much chewing of xylitol gum. If you take in too much xylitol, it may soften your stools. It may have a laxative
yeah.
effect. That's a possibility.
That's the worst case.
Yeah.
So we have time for one more. Is this a quick
yes,
question?
Yes, yes. Happy holidays from Jerry. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. I'm a big fan of your show. I've listened to you for many years. Keep up your wonderful work. I have a simple question. I drink a shot of wheatgrass after my workouts over the last few months, 5 days a week, just as a nutritional supplement, not for any particular reasons. Just wondering if you think this is necessary and or if it has any benefits. Some say yes, some say no. Of course, your response will decide it for me.
Oh, wow.
Many thanks.
That's a big responsibility. this is like I'm holding his fate in my hands here. Well, what do you say? What's your take on? Because you see a lot of nutrition patients.
Yes.
And many of them are wheatgrass enthusiasts.
That's true.
So what's your take on that?
Wheatgrass is perfectly fine. It's mm-hmm. good for detox. It's good for cleansing. I don't have any
take
problem
it as a
with
shot.
Wheatgrass. You
I
take
find,
it as a shot.
I find it kind of makes my stomach do a somersault.
It does that for some people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if anybody's
and
having
can,
that reaction, I would
and
just
I can,
say stay away.
I mean, I can do tequila shots.
Hmm.
Don't do them very often.
Yeah.
But I was at a crazy wedding in Mexico a couple of months ago, and I did a couple. You know, I didn't drink right out of the bottle like some other people.
Yeah.
You know, people would just open up their mouths, and the waiters would come and pour the contents
oh my.
Of the bottle. Yeah, this is a wild
That's
crowd.
It's quite the party.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I was one of the more conservative partygoers here. But anyway, so but wheatgrass shots.
Yeah.
There's something like, I think it's more, to me, a metaphor, you know, that people do that. It's like something pure and green, and
yeah.
it's like, it's so concentrated, and there's something about earthy goodness about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the science about it. I'm sure there's like vitamins and minerals and good stuff. But, you know, you could also eat a salad. That's less dramatic, and you'll get a
yeah.
lot of vitamins and minerals.
Right.
And the other thing we did point out about the green juice craze is you get an awful lot of like oxalic acid from
right.
that kind of stuff. And I think that wheatgrass is, we can check this, but I think wheatgrass is fairly high in oxalic acid, which promotes kidney stones.
Right.
And
the other thing is, if you have a gluten intolerance or certainly celiac disease.
Yeah, now wheatgrass would be a little less, it doesn't have the meat protein as much, but I think
right.
if you truly had celiac disease, that would be something you might not want to do.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it is a little bit of protein.
We know people with celiac who completely stay
right.
away.
Right.
Right.
So, you know, I'm sorry I can't really, I mean, if it feels good, do it.
If it feels good, do it.
Yeah, I'm not inalterably opposed to it.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sold on it.
I'm really not either.
Yeah. I'm an agnostic when it comes to wheatgrass shots.
Eat well, exercise, get plenty of sleep,
you know,
sunshine.
I recall whenever my dog
water.
Had an upset stomach, he knew what to do. He would eat grass. He would go to the lawn and he would literally eat grass.
Because it would cause him to vomit.
Oh, is that what
yes.
yeah, they
I was watching my friend's greyhound do
right.
that. What's Ringo doing?
Yes.
We were dog sitting Ringo.
It's like an emetic.
Yes.
And they
yes.
Knew.
He kept eating the grass. What's going on?
So
and then
he
would vomit
spit
it
up. But it's
yes.
an instinctual behavior. It's
yeah.
not like he read
and
it.
And then sniff all around it until we got tired of watching that.
Oh,
so.
That's gross.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's an example of a wired behavior that's actually must have some adaptive value. Because and I might be part greyhound because I feel like upchucking when I have it. I just kind of have to take a couple of breaths there. Okay, steady on. But you know, it is nauseating.
Yeah, I also think in ancient Chinese medicine that when you crave the bitter greens,
mm-hmm.
like a broccoli rabe or something like that. That it may, or even dandelion, I'm not sure how
it's a
bitter
liver,
dandelion.
Liver sign?
Yeah, that it's a liver sign that your body is craving some detox.
Detox.
Or something, if
okay.
you're craving those kinds of things.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so I can see that this would be like a really good time for people maybe to crank out the wheatgrass juicer, because after the New Year's,
yes,
Christmas, Thanksgiving, the bowl games,
mm-hmm,
all that excess.
Time for detox.
Wait, this is going to be a big theme this month, detox. And we're going to get yeah, people to start looking at the Core Restore program.
Yes.
Which is, we call it Detox in a Box. It's a simple program that you can self-administer. A lot of our patients, mm-hmm, are doing it as a way of sort of doing a reset for January. You know, people want to gain some weight. They feel toxic. They're bloated. They drank too much. Take too much sugar.
We have two patients who already came in and requested it. So
yeah,
they're already on their way.
January is the detox month. So, check it out. It's called, what's it called?
Core Restore.
Oh, Core Restore.
Core,
yeah,
Restore.
Core Restore.
Mm-hmm.
Core Restore. And it's available through drhoffman.com. And comes with easy to follow instructions on how you can perform your own detox. If you're on, caution, if you're taking multiple medications for complex medical conditions,
yes,
consult with your health practitioner before.
And don't do it if you're pregnant.
Right. You don't need.
Yeah.
Not a time to detox.
Not a time to detox.
Yeah, sometimes people get a little overzealous. All right, thanks very much, Layla. Happy New Year once again.
Happy New Year to our listeners.
And we promise you more of the same in 2015. Hard to say it. 2015, 2015, 2015. Keep sending your questions to radioprogram@aol.com. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.